A very good day to you all. Welcome back to Marca's Eye on the Liga, the English-speaking Spanish football podcast that gets the juices flowing before we dive back into the La Liga campaign after the international break. A relatively comfortable international break for the Spanish, of course, confirming World Cup qualification. And here on the show, along myself, Ollie Wilson, to dive into all things Spanish football, both international, domestic and continental, of course, is Mr. Mark Mayo. How you doing, Mark? Pleasure to chat with you as always. How have the travels been around the fine continent of Europe, my friend?
Yeah, they've been excellent. Thanks for having me again. It's been nice having a few weeks off the podcast as well. A chance for me to G up my juices, as it were, for the return. And seem to have plenty to chat about today.
Yeah, it should be interesting in terms of the Spanish going to be topping this Group G, of course. We all knew that that was going to happen in the European World Cup qualifiers. 9 wins, 1 draw, 0 defeats in what was expected to be a tougher than normal group alongside the Italians. But with these two games left to go, Albania and Israel coming into the final international World Cup qualifying break, we all knew that Spain were going to get the job done quite comfortably. You'd imagine on home soil against Albania and Israel would be a kind of a bit of a knees up, feet up, don't have to take life too seriously sort of game. Is that what we got, do you think, Mark?
Yeah, it is pretty much what we got. I think, as you say, going into the qualifiers, Albania had just been at Euro 2016 and Israel a bit of an unknown quantity, but neither of which failed to test Italy or Spain to any real extent. Obviously, Italy drew against them a couple of days ago, but Albania at home, it's a sort of proposition that they might cause you a couple of issues, but Spain dealt with it perfectly. 3 early goals. Lopetegui said they kind of lost control after that, but it doesn't really matter what happens after that. Albania aren't going to come back at you, so it's nice and easy. And the same thing at Israel. A later goal, for sure, for Asier Ilarramendi, but again, it was a dead rubber. I think Israel, their coach is meant to be leaving, their captain threw his armband on the ground last month and hasn't appeared since. So, you know, it's a good time to play that sort of team.
I mean, it's interesting, the kind of casting aside of Albania and their chances, Mark, because there are going to be hipsters in Shoreditch listening to this that'll be very offended by that, because they were, as I said last week, the kind of the hipster's choice, if you will, this Albania side for the Euros last summer and expected to go a little further than perhaps they did. In terms of the World Cup qualification as a whole, I touched on it just a second ago, saying it was meant to be a little more difficult than expected when you throw in a nation like the Italians into the mix as well. Certainly, those two were expected to vie for the top spot in the group. And there were some, I mean, unknown quantities, yes, but also known to be relatively comfortable to deal with, or expected to be comfortable to deal with in that group in terms of, you know, Macedonia and Liechtenstein were obviously going to be the whipping boys. It's kind of worked out in the order you'd have expected, but there were no real slip-ups for Lopetegui. And that's really what was important with this World Cup qualification, of coming into the job, finding his own style, his own core team, maybe not upsetting the apple cart too much and keeping everybody on side, and getting the Spanish side in the end comfortably to the World Cup finals in Russia for next summer.
Well, the comfort that they have had is a testament to what Lopetegui's done. Is it's easy to forget that last summer they were, you know, a shadow of a team that they'd previously been. They were knocked out of the World Cup in bad circumstances. They were knocked out of the Euros, a pretty lackluster performance against Italy. So it's a bit of a monkey off their back to beat them. And they beat them convincingly at the Bernabeu last month. It was just a case of resetting and beginning again. The team itself doesn't look that different from what it was before. The actual, you know, the players that are there, you're still looking at Iniesta, Ramos is still the key player at the back with Piqué, Morata and Costa are your strikers. Nothing has changed much about Spain apart from the mentality. There's just a bit more positivity, and we'll have to see if that can be carried through to the World Cup now.
I mean, the attacking lineup, that front line, has just had a nice rotation around it throughout the qualifiers in terms of its stars, and obviously Isco coming to the forefront as he has done throughout the last 12 months, and we continue to praise him. Rodrigo, for instance, given the opportunity to kind of lead the line, if you will, in the centre of that front three, the Valencia man, of course, and probably getting a little help of the confidence that Valencia have had to start the season. But you wouldn't say there's a definite out-and-out attacker that's got their place nailed on guaranteed as, say, a front number nine or a guaranteed front three, as you'd see perhaps at Barcelona and Real Madrid for this Spanish lineup. It shows versatility, depth again, and that there can be, in Lopetegui's international side, a chemistry between a number of kind of front three players that can play a role in a style of football that he wants.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got Iago Aspas is the kind of known backup striker. I don't think we'll see Adovith at the World Cup, but we've got Aspas there to back up Diego Costa and Morata, are two very different sort of strikers who can play as and when they're needed. Obviously, Costa's not been involved in the last couple of weeks, and we don't know if he's going to be involved in the World Cup. That's a bit of a question mark. But what we've seen also is how Lopetegui's gone back to this strikerless formation. He's not afraid to play Isco and David Silva and Iniesta all in and around that striker's role, just to create a little bit more havoc. And it certainly worked against Italy. And that might well be, depending on Costa and Morata's fitness, the formation that he goes with in the big games at the World Cup.
Do you expect to see Costa back? Is that something that you think, A, would be beneficial to Spain, even though he's obviously not played in this first half of the season, won't, of course, until he gets to Atletico Madrid and is able to play once his move becomes official in January? Do you expect Lopetegui to kind of welcome that with open arms? Because it is, again, you know, a big, bulky number nine that they can use as a pinpoint for attacks if they need to go to that style of play. But then again, it's a guy that is a bit volatile. He's got a rush of blood to his head in him, for sure. And he hasn't been playing consistent first-team football for anything over the last few months or so.
No, well, he's got until March. I mean, they play Germany away in Dusseldorf on the 23rd of March, and I think that squad is, you know, that's going to be the effective, the World Cup template squad, as it were. I think that's where you're going to see, if Diego Costa is fit and firing by March, then he's got a good chance of making that squad, and then afterwards you would expect him to make the World Cup. I think he will. I actually think that in attack, that's the striker position. Rodrigo has come through in the last week or so, but aside from those players that I mentioned a moment ago, there aren't, you know, hundreds and hundreds of candidates for Spain to pick from. Mm-hmm. Certainly teams like Germany, France have a better roster, a better selection of players available to them. If Lopetegui loses Morata, if he loses Aspas, then he's almost going to have to turn to Costa because there'll be so short of options.
Has this qualification group got people enthusiastic about the national team once again? I mean, you spend a bit of time out in Spain in the last few months or so, and do you get a feeling that the national team is, there's a bit more belief after what, as you touched on earlier, has been disappointing results at major tournaments in the last two attempts?
Well, I spent a week in Barcelona, so I'm not too sure that I could feel too much national sensibilities there. It is like you get the sense, even like from the Madrid office in Marca, you do get the sense that this is something they want to get behind. The success they had over the last eight or nine years, they want to return to that. As far as Spain see it, they have no desire to get knocked out in the early stages of the knockouts like they did at the Euros. This is an excellent chance for them to go to a World Cup, and they should be looking at Final Four as a minimum, depending on the other squads, and looking across what they have to offer as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about Barcelona and obviously everything that's going on politically in that region, because moving away from the international break and looking towards the La Liga campaign, just briefly, we'll come on to it in a little more detail, but there is that Atletico Madrid against Barcelona game coming up this weekend. There's been a lot of talk, obviously, about the European qualification campaign for Spain on the podcast. What about, and you actually reminded me of this before we started going today on the show, Lionel Messi's still got a job to do, hasn't he, in South American qualification?
Yeah, he has. And I tell you what, I absolutely love going through all the permutations and all the little what might happen and who might happen when, what this goal means here, especially with the UEFA section with the playoffs. I love going through all the little bits of, oh, they need to win, but then if they draw, then it's the goal difference keeps them out. Like, there's so many different variables for this South American qualifier the last day. And the great thing is that it's going to happen when we're in bed. So we'll just basically all of these little things that can happen are going to happen. And then we'll wake up and then, yeah, who knows, Argentina away to Ecuador. It's an awful place to go. I think in South America there, being the away team is so much more difficult because you've got to go to altitude and you've got to travel so much further than you do in Europe. It's a big unknown, but I do expect Argentina to be there, even though they have been quite shambolic in many right ways this qualifier.
Yeah, you think about this Argentinian side, the firepower that it's got in terms of going forward, only 16 goals in 17 games in the World Cup qualification process. Just to give you a little outline of how it stands at the moment in South America, Brazil on top with 38 points, cruising through to the finals in Russia next year. Uruguay second on 28, Chile and Colombia both on 26. This is where it gets tight. Third and fourth, Chile and Colombia, 26, plus two goal difference each. Peru in fifth in the playoff spot, plus one on goal difference, 25 points. Argentina sixth, 25 points, plus one goal difference, but below Peru on goals scored, I believe. They do get down to head-to-head at some point as well when it all comes down to it. Then you've got Paraguay in seventh, who seventh could go third after the last round of games in theory. On minus five, 19 scored, 24 conceded, and then Ecuador, Bolivia and Venezuela all out of the running. But Chile, Colombia, Peru, Argentina and Paraguay have plenty to fight for, and it's going to be a test for the Argentinians, who you get the feeling Argentina as a footballing nation in the last few years, when it comes to the big moments, that's almost when they seem to crumble a bit.
Yeah, they've just never found their settled formation. The various coaches that have been in charge of the Argentine national team for a number of years now, particularly with Messi, haven't known their best formation. They haven't known their best attacker to go alongside Messi. And Sampaoli kind of mystifyingly has decided that Paulo Dybala, who is arguably Serie A's best player at the moment, isn't the man to go alongside Lionel Messi. It's some bloke who plays in Argentina and misses all his chances from the last game, it appears to be. So
it's not Martin Palermo, is it, by any chance?
No, but if it was 2008, it probably would be. So it's that sort of situation where it's not Messi's fault. I think that's quite clear. But the person whose fault it is, you know, the blame is shared so widely and deeply in Argentina that if they don't do it, it will be, I mean, the recriminations will be endless.
Well, Messi will be retiring from the national team once again, I imagine, along with a few others. But it'll be interesting to see what happens in the South American qualifying this Tuesday night. We're recording this on the Tuesday afternoon, of course, and about 9 hours' time as we speak, that game will be kicking off. Let's get back to all things Spanish football before we dive down a well of South American international football and start harking back to France 98 and looking at that Brazil side, and of course then talking about Argentina going out to Holland in that. And before I get too sidetracked, let's talk about what's going on domestically then. This weekend, all eyes will be on Madrid. A Madrid derby taking place that perhaps isn't the biggest Madrid derby you could ever have, but the important one. Atletico Madrid hosting Barcelona. And with everything that has gone on in Spain in the last 2 weeks, this is a game that almost feels like it doesn't need to happen right now, really, does it, Mark?
No, it's going to be a tension-filled game. It's going to be, I mean, it's theatre, isn't it? It's the premier game of the weekend. It's absolute cinema. A number of reasons, and I think this is, you look at the table, Barcelona have won 7 out of 7. This is the weekend that Barcelona drop points, and potentially this is the weekend that the title race, you know, quote unquote, is opened up again.
Yeah, opened up, except for the fact that Barca have got a pretty good record when they take on Atleti in Madrid, and considering how they've had such an indifferent start to the season, Atleti, the first two games, they were really poor. And Simeone has still continued to rotate and move things around in his side and has spoken about he still wants to find a partner for Griezmann in that front line. And of course, now there's the imminent arrival of Diego Costa and the impact he can make on this club. I mean, is this going to change that banner of Costa's arrival hanging over the club right now? Is that going to change how these players in the front line are going to play, either together or as individuals? Of course, Griezmann doesn't really have too much to worry about in his spot in the side unless he looks to move on elsewhere. I'm just wondering how Atleti approach this game against Barcelona. If they're going to look to be a little bit more open and aggressive, or if they're going to try and sit back and soak up the pressure as they normally do against this Barca side that, of course, isn't at full strength in its starting 11, particularly in that front attacking line.
Well, I think Simeone typically would partner Torres and Griezmann up front for this. He likes Torres for the big games, just to run around and do little annoying little niggly things for the defenders. And I think that is probably what I'd expect to see for this game. If he goes with Correa, he goes with his most in-form attacker, arguably. Correa's had a very good start to the season, and he is the one, along with Vieto, that I think is under the most pressure from Diego Costa coming in. I'm not sure it's going to inspire them. I can certainly imagine it putting a lot of pressure on them and them feeling like no matter what they do, it won't be good enough. Certainly, Vieto looks to be, you know, he hasn't scored. I think he's only scored one goal for Atletico in the league. So this game, as I say, I think Torres is going to start with Griezmann. Just have that old-fashioned sort of Atletico. Maybe Thomas Partey in there, but most likely it'll be Gabi, Koke, Yannick Carrasco on the wing with Sao Negres as well. It has all the makings of a theatrical game, as I say, but Atletico Madrid don't tend to be involved in high-scoring games. Barcelona and Atletico have only conceded 6 goals between them this year. So a single goal either way, I predict, but there's a lot of ifs and buts in that, for sure.
What about Barca? We've obviously seen this kind of 4-4-2 formation adopted in recent weeks from Valverde. We obviously know that they can play that 4-3-3. We've seen De La Feu start alongside Suarez and Messi in a front line. You've also got to take in the impact that Suarez and Messi are involved in these World Cup qualifiers, of course, in South America. And the drain on South American players travelling back from the continent across to Europe and then playing again on the weekend does seem to affect them, of course, more than it does the Europeans, particularly as this is a Saturday night game rather than a Sunday and having that extra night's rest for them as well. Is that going to play a part into Barca at all and perhaps just slow down their attack a little bit, particularly perhaps as we get into the latter stages of the game?
Yeah, I think so. I think I fear for Suarez actually a little bit because he's got this cyst in his knee, which I think they're meant to operate on next month or something. They're really unsure about it, and he's started the season pretty poorly anyway. So Suarez is someone I wouldn't be surprised at all if it turns out that it's going to be Messi up front on his own with maybe Denis Suarez and De La Feu as the wingers, sort of swapping around that that Barcelona attack as we know it. Because going 4-3-3 with that, you know, Messi and Suarez up front with De La Feu, I'm not sure it's the right way to approach this game. But Valverde is his own man and he's got results so far. Paulinho is certainly a wild card that he has to throw in there. So, although Paulinho, again, is another player that's been playing in South America. So it's hard to predict this Valverde team. The thing about Luis Enrique's team is we could predict it every week and we knew what was going to happen. Valverde doesn't quite have that yet.
It has been said recently from Uruguayan coach Oscar Tabarez that Suarez is ready and fit to play football. He doesn't need knee surgery, despite the reports in Spain. So it's interesting to keep an eye on that to see how that changes and how that develops over the next few weeks in particular, if Suarez is carrying this injury and this cyst in his knee that he does need to actually get operated on and removed. It might affect Barca, of course, down the line with Dembele out as well at the moment as well. In terms of then how you see it, you've said it's going to be a one goal perhaps in this one to get through. Is this the best time to take on Barca? Again, off an international break, the amount of travel, the fact that, you know, Simeone's side is still going to be reeling slightly from particularly the loss in the Champions League to Chelsea and will want to get a big win against big opposition to effectively show people as well. I mean, personally, for one, I haven't really believed that this is an Atletico Madrid side after everything that happened last year that can challenge for a title. They're right in the bunch with Sevilla and Valencia at the moment, scrapping out for second place in the Liga table. But to give themselves some title credentials and put themselves 3 points off Barcelona this weekend would just change matters slightly, wouldn't it?
Yeah, a win or even a good point, I think, would be a massive boost to Atletico. And this is an Atletico team that drew 0-0 against Leganes and lost to Chelsea. So they're in pretty big need of it, having had an otherwise very good, kind of middle of the season thus far. So they need something. In terms of it being a good time to play Barcelona, I'm not sure. I think any team that has won every game since the end of September is a bad team to be playing, pretty much. I mean, they haven't conceded since Eibar scored against them, which will be just under a month ago when they kick off this game. So, you know, Barcelona seem to have that wiliness about them. They seem to know the context and the pragmatism of the game, which, you know, is quite typically Valverde in many senses. And this one is another, it's probably going to be the biggest test of their season thus far.
We're talking about teams that don't concede too much at the moment. Let's talk about Sevilla. They've got a really interesting game to really kick off the Saturday in La Liga, away on the road against Bilbao. And I have to say, we all seemed, I don't think too defeatist about Sevilla, but losing Sampaoli, a lot of people felt that this was going to be a Sevilla side that really struggled to impress, to reignite the fire inside them without that sort of manager leading them. It hasn't been a goals scoring season so far for them, but sat in second and only 3 goals conceded in the first 7 games of the year. Something's going right in Seville at the moment for this side.
Well, they seem to have transitioned into the Berizzo era quite comfortably, and I think he's kind of kept it simple for them in a large extent. He's not really shaking it up too much. He's probably asking less of the players than Sampaoli was, which is a kind of metaphor for their downfall last season anyway. This Athletic Club have started pretty poorly this season. There's not really any other way to say it other than they're losing points in La Liga and in the Europa League that you wouldn't expect them to lose. So this is
why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, we're just talking about Barcelona and Valverde and how pragmatic and everything he's been. It just shows how good a job he did at Athletic Club last season and the seasons before that, that the new man comes in. And, you know, Zidane probably knows as much about the club as anyone on this planet. And yet he's struggled to get that same team working in the way that it was working. So, you know, not very long ago. If Zidane's under any threat, and I kind of doubt it at the moment, then it will certainly get worse if Sevilla win. It's that type of game where, you know, the loser in this game will feel it very strongly, I think, because Sevilla, a victory, you know, really kicks them on. Athletic Club, a victory really, you know, restarts their season. Ultimately, though, you know, it's the cop-out to say that it's probably going to be a draw, but I think that's probably the...
Sitting on the fence here, Mark Mayo. Of all
the way it might be heading.
Wow, I didn't think I'd hear you sitting on the fence with some of these games. In terms of this Bilbao side, I mean, you always get the feeling they're, and it's wonderful that they do it, to be honest, and the history that has, and the club, the link to the local area, of course, only bringing in players from the region, but it does shoot themselves in the foot slightly. Having said that, you know, Kepa is a keeper that is in hot demand at the moment, if you believe the rumours flying around marca.com/CN. You've got Laporte, you've got who's, I think, a very good, solid centre-back at times when he wants to be. They've got a really good balance in this side of young and old. And the young that are coming through do seem to be quite hotly rated whenever you see them. I mean, obviously, you look at Munain, who's been around forever. You've got Iñaki Williams, who certainly a season and a half ago was showing some real promise in this Bilbao side. You know, you've got Raul Garcia to anchor things up slightly. I mean, there is no reason why this team is doing as poorly as they are this season at the moment. Even if you do lose a manager that's able to pull it together, there should be on paper enough talent in this side for them to be able to play good football without needing too much instruction.
Well, that's why I fear that the finger will be pointed at Zidane, at the coach, because that is the only thing that's really changed from last season. They have got a good team. They've got a team. The problem is with players like Munain and Williams is that these are the players that have been tipped for big money moves, and like you say, Kepa is at the moment, but they've never actually been taken on those big money moves. And if they were good enough, then they would have been signed. So you've got to ask, what are they lacking? What did the big teams not see in Munain that they did see in Ander Herrera? These are where these players are lacking. And perhaps at the moment we're just seeing that while these are very good players, and technically they're very good, but maybe mentally and maybe even physically, they're just lacking at the moment.
perhaps. It'd be interesting to see if this ends up being a bit of a duff fest in terms of a lack of goals, or if it's a game perhaps that can ignite Sevilla going forward this season in terms of finding the back of the net. It has been a little few and far between, and relying on Wissam Ben Yedder, for the French centre-forward, who, to his credit, has had an excellent start to the season. It's those around him that have been struggling, and a bit of discipline problems as well at times in that Sevilla side. They seem to be struggling with that chatting back to the referee that we touched on at the start of the year quite a bit, and interesting to see how that will develop. Now, we've got a Madrid derby as well, Mark, to have a quick look at. Real Madrid taking on Getafe. I mean, perhaps not the most famous Madrid derby, and probably not the most difficult one on the road that Real Madrid are going to face, but they need to make sure that they win out for the next few games after this international break at the moment, because the pressure just keeps on rising and rising on this side. The more and more they stumble, at least for their sake, away from home is where the points seem to be coming.
Well, no, you're right. It's not as difficult as going to Leganés.
That is true. You know, always a tough one when you used to have to head to Rayo Vallecano, of course, as well, in the northeast of the city.
Exactly. So that's Getafe, probably the more favoured of the Madrid derbies. But it's, you know, Barcelona struggled to get past them a couple of weeks ago. That was a difficult game for them. Villarreal sacked their manager because they lost to them. So it's no shoe in this. But as you say, Real Madrid are very good on the road. It's after an international break, yes. But I think that Ronaldo is obviously playing tonight. He should get through the Switzerland game at least. He didn't play 45 minutes against Andorra, so he shouldn't be too bad, all things being normal. Then
they never really are with Ronaldo, though, are they? Being normal? I mean, the guy thrives on the exemplary, and you know he's never going to go half-arsed at it. And, you know, 50% doesn't seem to be in his repertoire. There's always a worry, you don't you feel, that on international duty that he'll push himself too far, as he did, of course, in the European Championships final, and got that unlucky injury and missed the start of the season last year for Real Madrid. I mean, I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah,
here.
No, it's a good point to raise, because if he's going to push himself in any game, obviously it's going to be the most important game that Portugal have played since that final, which is against Switzerland. And if he's going to push himself, then he might not do too well. But I think, I mean, if Real Madrid get a sniff that he won't play against Getafe, then they just won't train him for the next, you know, 4 or 5 days, whenever it is that he comes back. They just won't even bother. And if he's that bad, then he just won't play and he'll be safe for the Champions League. So The thing is with Real Madrid is that they're very used to it now. And the players that come in, Asensio didn't play in both the Spanish games. Isco didn't start against Israel, so he'll be fairly rested as well. There's options. Bale doesn't look like he'll be fit. But Benzema hasn't played, so I don't think Real Madrid will have too many issues in this game. I don't rule out them dropping points, because Getafe, they're an annoying side to play, and I think they'll get under Real Madrid's skin, and if they do that, they'll have a much better chance.
The mosquitoes of La Liga at the moment, Getafe, just getting annoying, buzzing around you and just stopping you really doing what you kind of want to get down to business and do. I mean, a couple of sides that have been doing that in the start of the early campaign as well, Mark, Real Betis against Valencia. Betis in sixth at the moment, Valencia flying high in third. This on Sunday night is a game that you'd have looked at if the fixtures have been made, you know, a few months in advance, which of course they aren't in La Liga, and you'd have thought, oh, why is this being put on a Sunday night game? Like, who's going to tune into this? Put Atletico Madrid against Barcelona, move that to the Sunday. But settling down for a bit of paella, a bit of sangria, and a bit of Betis against Valencia suddenly has the mouth watering, and it's not the food or the drink that's doing it. It is the football in this tie.
Yeah, this is a cracking game. This should be a really fun game, because both teams are at that stage of the season where they've actually already achieved quite a lot. Valencia going and trying to take a point, you know, you might say in the long run it'll do them some good, but really they're third, they're unbeaten for the season. 7 games in, they've got 15 points. It's the type of game that you may as well go and try and win. Real Betis, it's the same. They're sick. So if they lose, they're not going to drop down too far. But if they win, it's obviously that huge. It's like Athletic Club versus Sevilla. If you win, it's a huge boost. It just tells you that you are actually where you're in the position that you belong to be in. And these teams, neither of which have stunning defences, which is quite an important factor for this sort of game. They've both got good attacks, so I would expect there to be a certainly a lot of end-to-end action, if not a lot of goals.
We'll have a look at Betis' last outing, the 4-4 draw against Sociedad before the international break. A loss for them, Xavi Garcia, out from the holding midfield position for them. Quadricep injury, going to keep him out for a fair bit. Is that going to be a big blow for them? He does tend to pick up a lot of slack in the heart of the pitch.
Yeah, he's all action. He's an intelligent key player. He's been there and done it as well, which is quite important. Mm. But I mean, again, this just opens up the way for more goals in this game, doesn't it?
Yeah, Valencia fans will be eyeing this one up for perhaps getting a hatful on the road against Betis. Valencia, who've started with 15 goals already in this campaign, only Sociedad and Barca have scored more so far this season. Quite impressive indeed for a side that couldn't buy goals a few seasons ago. Betis only one fewer and have conceded 11, though, in their first 7 games of the season. Not great defensively from them. Clean sheets are a must if they are going to start to make real waves in keeping perhaps Europa League in their sights. And Quique Setién will be expected to be improving on that defence time and time again as the weeks pass through and he gets used to life in his new job. In terms then of how Marcelino and Setién will be looked at, you said already that both these managers have started and have achieved something already this season with where they are right now. Who do you think's had the better start to the season in terms of their expectations being met as managers that both kind of took the reins of their clubs this summer?
I think it's Marcelino, because if you look at that Real Betis team, Setién is getting the most out of it, and you'd expect Betis. They're not in January. I don't think they're going to go and, you know, improve on that team too much. This is Setién. You know, he's getting the that expectation out of it, as it were. As for Valencia's team, I think there's still a lot of work to be done on it, and I think Marcelino feels like there's still a lot of work to be done on it as well. So for him to be bringing that team all the way to third at the moment, I think is a pretty astounding achievement. He's getting the best out of Simone Zaza, even if there's some Marcelino and Simone Zaza's girlfriend appear to be having a little bit of a lover's tiff at the moment. He's doing as much with that team, and you know that he's doing a little bit better with it because he does have that little bit of not quite unhappiness, but he just knows that there's a couple more percent, maybe one more player, maybe another attacker, maybe another midfielder will really just make that team, a team that was good as Valencia once were.
Well, I mean, that is the impossible dream for Valencia that they're starting perhaps to start to try and realise, especially in this early part of the season. Other games, Malaga take on Leganes on Sunday afternoon, along with Girona against Villarreal. Villarreal have been a bit all over the place and certainly not the steady submarine that we're used to seeing at the back. Eibar take on Deportivo La Coruña to start Sunday's games in the early kickoff. Getafe against Real Madrid, we've mentioned. Alaves against Real Sociedad is after them. And of course, Athletic Bilbao against Sevilla kicks off the Saturday, finished up with Madrid, Atletico Madrid, that is, against Barcelona. And it all starts back on Friday with Espanyol against Levante. Now, of course, Mark, the Ballon d'Or will start to loom bigger and bigger on the horizon as we push towards the end of the year. Two names are always on it, Messi or Ronaldo. They've released 28 other accompanying names to kind of distract us, if you will, just quickly. Aubameyang at Dortmund, Karim Benzema, of course, of Real Madrid, Bonucci of AC Milan in Italy, Buffon of Juventus, Cavani of PSG, Coutinho of Liverpool, Kevin De Bruyne of Manchester City, David De Gea, Manchester United and the Spanish national team, Dybala at Juventus, Dzeko from Roma, Radamel Falcao of Monaco, Antoine Griezmann at Atleti, Eden Hazard at Chelsea, Hummels at Bayern Munich, Isco of Real Madrid, Harry Kane from Tottenham, N'Golo Kante of Chelsea, Toni Kroos of Real Madrid, Lewandowski of Bayern Munich, Mane at Liverpool, Marcelo of Real Madrid, Kylian Mbappe, PSG, Mertens of Napoli, Lionel Messi of Barca, Luka Modric, Real Madrid, Neymar of PSG, Jan Oblak, Atletico Madrid, Sergio Ramos, Real Madrid, Cristiano Ronaldo, Real Madrid, and Barcelona's Luis Suarez, making up the 30 on the supposed short list. I mean, the short list is 5 at the end of the day, Mark, isn't it? It's not 30. In terms of the Ballon d'Or this year, is it as clear-cut that it's either Messi or Ronaldo once again? Are there any names in there that you can drop in and say, actually, they've got a really good chance. You mentioned Dybala, who's been phenomenal for Juventus over the last two seasons now, really, and obviously helped guide them to a Champions League final appearance against Real Madrid, and has been arguably the hottest player in Serie A over the last few years. People will try and talk up Harry Kane at Tottenham and his goal-scoring form. N'Golo Kante is like that Makalele player that just seems to continually just go under the radar that bit too often. David De Gea at Manchester United, without a doubt, looking like the best keeper in Europe at the moment. But Buffon, if anybody deserves it just for longevity, you'd have to say that he should have a crack at being able to lift the Ballon d'Or. Who are the names? You know, Neymar's in there as well. Who are the names that you think will be able to test Ronaldo or Messi? Who are the names that are going to be in that top three, do you think, at this point?
Well, that top three, it's only going to be Neymar, isn't it, sadly? I mean, I don't think he's anywhere near being the third best player in the world at the moment, but he will be the third player on that podium. He was the third best in the FIFA The Best Award as well, which, I mean, maybe we should have a shortlist for the best awards itself as to Ballon d'Or versus the best and maybe some others. But
yeah, that all seems very contrived, like creating an award that FIFA can obviously... Oh no, ours is more important than the Ballon d'Or because it's called The Best, and then the Ballon d'Or will be renamed like The Bestest of the Best, brought to you by Ballon d'Or in association with Danone yogurt and stuff like that. Other yogurts are available, etc. But yeah, I mean, it's so over the top, some of these.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Futurama joke, Universe A versus Universe 1. maybe Buffon, but the only way that Buffon's going to have got it, if he won the Champions League, and he didn't. You said about going under the radar for Kante, I think Luka Modric is going to have that curse as well, because a lot of Real Madrid fans really, you know, hold him up as one of the key players in the team, and yet he's just not going to get the votes, because I think midfielders don't get the votes very often. I think the raw stats, you'd have to suggest Mbappe is a good shout for the raw stats of, you know, being part of the best striker, the best player in a team that won the French League and got to the Champions League semi-finals. That can't be ignored, but this is over the calendar year, isn't it?
It is over the calendar year, yes.
Yeah, and he's not done much in the past 6 weeks, so I think people might have forgotten about him.
Well, he's had a big move and then gone quiet because he's playing second fiddle to Neymar at Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, that's ruled him out, and, you know, that sort of thing counts in these sort of things.
That's why Dybala then surely would be the clear-cut choice to be that third man. And I'm assuming the other two are going to be Ronaldo and Messi that you're on about. There's going to be no other surprises.
Yeah, sadly. I don't know. I think the Italian league is... You're talking about, like, a vote of the... this is done by journalists, isn't it? I mean, there's a good chance that the journalists will pick up the Italian league, but I think in the general speaking, Serie A is kind of just left aside. It's just kind of moved away and discounted for a large extent. The Premier League wouldn't have that had it, you know, had a standout player that could win this, but it doesn't. And therefore, it's going to be... It's annoying in a sense for me to be annoyed that it probably will be Ronaldo, but it probably will be Ronaldo, and that's annoying because I don't think he's been, you know, that good apart from in the big games when he's been incredible.
What are you picking up in terms of then who the general public feel could be lifting the Ballon d'Or this year then?
Well, I mean, on the Marca website, you can get a good idea of where our readers' allegiances lie, because we've had our own little vote, and about 25 of the players won 0%, so...
Okay, yeah, obviously.
The ones who have reached past 1% are Isco, who's on 2%. And then we go, so Isco's third, I mean, at the moment, in the Marca readers' minds. And then it's 27% for Lionel Messi and 64% for Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, that is, I would like to say it was surprising, but you don't see it as being surprising at all in any way, shape or form, really, do you? I think Isco's got half a chance just because the last 4 months or so of the year seem to have a big weight on what people think about Ballon d'Or voting. And Isco has been one of the standouts in European football for Madrid and for Spain in the last few months. To be honest, if Kevin De Bruyne continues how he started with Manchester City this season and can do it for another 12 months... He's got to be up there with a shout of taking on Ronaldo and Messi, particularly as they both start to wane slightly in their aging years and perhaps a new star is born on the European stage, but you can't see it being anywhere apart from Messi or Ronaldo. Where do you put it, Mark, then, at this point in time? And of course, there's still a few months for voting to be changed, if you will.
At the moment, I think Ronaldo's slight favourite, purely because Real Madrid won the Champions League. The next, you know, if Argentina get knocked out of the World Cup, I think Messi's, you know, pretty much doomed. And in the same sense, I think you alluded to next year. Next year is going to be a fascinating one because the World Cup will, you know, it will essentially dictate who will win it. So placing a bet for this year is, you know, 50-50. But for next year, there's endless possibilities of players who can emerge. And remember Cannavaro winning it after Italy won in 2006. Those sort of players are going to be the ones to look out for in 12 months' time.
Well, you can put a safe bet on it won't be an Englishman. Doing it.
That's Jordan for sure. Henderson for Ballon d'Or 2018. Jordan, you've heard it here first.
You don't even joke that has been touted around about 18 months ago when there was all the Henderson rumours of FIFA covers and stuff like that, and Jordan Henderson is the best midfielder in the world. Oh my goodness.
It's an interesting opinion to have.
It's a quite outrageous one, in my opinion, as well. And that's why a lot of social media can sometimes be skim-read, to say the least. All right, Mark, we'll leave it there. I think I'll probably go with Messi just because of, again, recent history for Ronaldo. It's been a poor start to the La Liga season. He's got to start turning it round for Real Madrid, who are in trouble. They have the Madrid derby against Getafe coming up on the weekend, and it is must-win for Real. Barca, 21 points, top of the pile in La Liga as we get back from the international break. Sevilla, 16 points in second. Valencia, third. Imagine if that is the final three at the end of the season with Atleti in fourth as well. That would be an almighty turn up for the books. But it's Barca on top. Mark, at that Mark Mayo, still got to be changed to the or number one Mark Mayo, surely. But at that Mark Mayo on Twitter, much appreciate your contribution as always on the show, mate.
No worries, mate. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure as always. Remember, you can get on to Marker in English on Twitter at Marker in English, at Marker in English, www.marker.com/en, www.marker.com/en for Mark, Ewan, Jason, Simon and everybody else's thoughts, news and views from around the world of Spanish football, your latest news and developing stories as they come in as well on marker.com/en. And of course, you can find us on Audio Boom and on iTunes. I on La Liga, just search it, like, rate, review the podcast and get back to us with any talking points that you'd like. And especially if you want to get back to us via Marker in English on Facebook as well, we will try and check that out and see if there are any discussion points that you'd like us to get onto next week. Until next week, enjoy the football coming up. La Liga has returned and Spain are off to Russia next summer. Will it be more international glory for them? We will find out in 12 months. We will find out if there's more glory for Barcelona in 7 days' time. Until then, have a good one.